From UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now, or learn the stuff they don't want you to know.
Hello and welcome back to the show. My name is Matt.
They call me Ben. We are joined with our super producer, Paul Deccant. Noel is away for the moment, but will return soon. Mm-hmm. As long as time still works the way that we conventionally understand it. Most importantly, you are you. That makes this stuff they don't want you to know. And I will get rid of this pun at the very top because Matt and our super producer, Paul, are already so tired of hearing me say it. Today's title is, Should We Be Concerned?
Yes, concerned. And for some reason, C-E-R-N is capitalized in that title. And that reason is that we are talking about an organization that if you are like most human beings on this planet now with an internet connection, you have heard of CERN. It's an organization that has constructed something that you may have also heard of called the Large Hadron Collider.
Yes, yes, sir. The Large Hadron Collider. That's what it's most well known for. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that wasn't, you know, was it best for us to just get that pun out of the way?
I think we had to, but I'm also in love with the title, so.
Okay,
no
well,
changes.
I promise I won't push it too much. Yes, you've probably remember hearing for years now about CERN and the Large Hadron Collider, and you've probably seen some, frankly, garbage explanations on mainstream news about how that works.
In non-mainstream news.
And probably in non-mainstream news as well. And you have hopefully also checked out some wonderful in-depth explanations about what this thing is and what it does. And we'll address some of that as well. But first, we want to establish that CERN is responsible for much more than a single incredibly significant series of experiments.
Yeah, it's essentially responsible for the creation of what we know as the World Wide Web, that www that you type in sometimes when you're using a computer. And you're a lot of times not on your phone.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it did that in 1989.
Right. Yes, the web was originally conceived by Tim Berners-Lee, and it was developed to meet this demand for automatic information sharing between scientists and universities and institutes around the world.
It's that thing we always talk about. In the past, if you're a scientist and you're working on some research, you just have your research and what was written down and you have access to. And if you can send that information that you're working on immediately to everybody else and you can get everybody else's, changing the game, man.
And so this really helped research at the time when it had a sort of rarefied or very specific set of users and a specific set of desires. And of course, they all said, this is great. We should do this with everything and we should have everyone check it out. What could go wrong?
Yeah, it'll be fine.
Right. And, you know, now the, internet is what it is, which is also changing. And I just want to go on record here. This has nothing to do with today's episode, in saying that as a personal opinion, any ideologies or politics aside, the FCC's decision to sell the American people down the river is just that, a massive betrayal, and it's going to be terrible.
Yeah, the day prior to recording this episode, the FCC voted to strike down the net neutrality rules that were put in place under the Obama administration, and that essentially the internet has been functioning on for its entire existence. Mm-hmm. Just being open and access to information is just for anybody who has a connection. Mm-hmm.
And I would be really curious to see whether you or Paul or Noel support the FCC's, I guess they would call it a quote-unquote decision for the quote-unquote good, because it's rare that I'm going to be so open with an opinion about this thing. But if you have kids – you should be concerned because we often hear from organizations around the world about the dangers of inequality in an economic sense. But history has proven, and sadly the future will prove, that an inequality of access to information is at least as dangerous as a lack of access to the coupon system we practice today.
Okay. Money, you mean?
Yeah, sorry. I'm doing like hot takes left and right.
Hey, man.
On a good note, Matt, when we were looking at some of this background for CERN, it made me recall another series that you and I used to do, Stuff of Genius.
Yeah, we did do Stuff of Genius for a while there, where we looked at inventors that were lesser known and the cool things that they created that have shaped our world and civilization.
And here's the thing. It's an animated show.
Yeah, animated on Final Cut Pro 7. What? And Photoshop.
By Matt the Madman Frederick himself.
And mostly Tyler Klang. Frederick.
And if you do some digging, you can find episodes that Matt did the voice work on as well, right? Are they still out there?
You can find them somewhere, yeah. They exist.
So do check out Stuff of Genius and let us know what you think, because we had a lot of fun doing that one. And
don't forget Coolest Stuff on the Planet.
which was Matt's travel show.
Don't ever search for that. Okay.
It's too late.
Next,
the first website at CERN.
Yes, exactly.
Is that what you want to talk about?
Yes.
Instead of Coolest Stuff on the Planet?
Well, next was the computer, right? Tim Berners-Lee, the gentleman who was working with CERN, he created this first website, which was essentially about the web itself. This is how you use this service. These are all the things you need to do to access other people's documents, how to set up your own server.
It's like an FAQ.
Yeah, exactly. It was the world's first website.
Yes. So the next machine, and that is capital N, little e, capital X, capital T, is still at CERN. Isn't that correct?
Yeah, really cool. And it's been there for so long. It's really neat that in 2013, CERN actually reinstated the website, the original first website, to its original address. And you can go there right now, if you want to check it out.
Check it out today, folks.
And that website is info.cern.ch. Check it out.
And Paul, while we're talking about that, is there sort of a retro sci-fi music cue you could throw in? Perfect. He's so good at that. You are so good at that, Paul.
So CERN has done a ton of things throughout the years. We mentioned this already. We talked about the first website. Awesome. We talked about the collider, the Large Hadron Collider that we will get into later. There are other things that they discovered through experimentation. Things that I don't fully understand. To be honest with you, things like W and Z bosons that I think I kind of understand what that means, but not really. And before that, they discovered neutral currents in this thing called the Gargamel bubble chamber, which sounds like a villain of some sort, but you know, that's fine.
Well, Gargamel from the Smurfs, right?
Gargamel. Wasn't Gargamel bad?
In the Smurfs, the character Gargamel was bad.
Yes.
But Gargamel itself was a heavy liquid bubble chamber detector that was operating for 9 years in the 70s. It was trying to detect neutrinos and anti-neutrinos.
And it found neutral currents.
And it found neutral currents, yeah. And, of course, we are not physicists.
No.
Most people are not.
No.
As it turns out. But we do know that we do have a grasp of some of the experiments that CERN has conducted. And what's important to note is that it's not just the Large Hadron Collider. They also created anti-hydrogen atoms in 1995, which, again, as a non-physicist, to me, that, you know, my thought is, why would you do that? Why would you? We're a family show, so I will say, why would you futz with things that were fine?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well, because we have to find out, Ben. That's what science and all this is all about. We just got to know. Smarter people than I need to know.
And, Matt, according to numerous people, CERN may be responsible for much, much, much.
So much more.
So much more. And we'll explore the facts surrounding CERN after a word from our sponsors. And we're back. Matt?
Yeah.
Earlier when we were off air, you and I talked about when to just explain what CERN was.
Yes.
And you were completely right. My old friend, we should have done it at the top of the show.
I don't know if we're right. I see there's a bit of an elongation that it's just keeping you on the edge of your seat. Like, what is CERN?
It turns out that CERN is an acronym for the Conseil Européen pour la Recherche Nucléaire, which I am not pronouncing very well.
Okay.
What does that mean in English?
It means the European Organization for Nuclear Research.
And as we said before, it's most well known for its massive thing called the Large Hadron Collider. It is not an ironic name. It's not, you know, like a Little John sort of moniker. It's describing a massive particle accelerator. And you, like many people, friends and neighbors, listeners, demons and angels out there in the audience, may be wondering, what the heck is a particle accelerator? We're very glad you asked.
So essentially, it's a machine that speeds up with using magnets, giant magnets that they're like 1,900 tons or more, 1,920 tons. I don't know exactly, but it's huge, these giant magnets. They speed up and increase the energy of a beam of particles, and they generate these electric fields that accelerate these particles, just basically continue to accelerate them, going around a large loop. And the magnetic fields that they have surrounding kind of the track that they send these particles around, it's just accelerating them and steering them and focusing them down into a tiny little beam. And then they smash them together.
Tight.
Yeah.
Sorry. I told you about this, right? I've been falling into this thing. You know how sometimes words just as concepts are mimetic entities of a type, and sometimes slang from the past or from a different language just sort of gets stuck in your mind like a splinter in your finger.
Yeah.
And so tight has been stuck in my head, and I am trying to tamp it down.
No worries.
But that was an excellent explanation, Matt.
It was okay, I think. We got through it. So there are a couple different types of these accelerators that have been used and built in the past. One of them is a linear accelerator, and that's where a beam of particles travels essentially in a straight line. I mean, it makes sense, right?
Sure.
Linear.
Yeah, yeah.
From one end to the other end.
Point A to point B.
Yeah. And with these, you can have maybe two of them that are on either side of this line, and you shoot the beams at each other, and they hit in the center, and that's when you're doing your experimentation, right at that center point where they're colliding.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
Then you got these circular accelerators, like the Large Hadron Collider, that have this ring, essentially, a circle of sorts that the particles just travel around this thing, accelerating, just getting faster and faster and faster and faster till they reach a point where it's getting pretty close to stuff we would observe with what we believe to be the Big Bang. They smash them together, and that point of smashing is where they do their major testing.
Smash point.
Yeah, it's a smash point. It's pretty tight.
Oh, no. I've spread my linguistic disease to you, and I apologize. In 2008, speaking of segues, CERN built the Large Hadron Collider. It's not only 27 kilometers in length, it is a circular accelerator, as Matt described earlier. It is also the world's most powerful accelerator as we record this now at the very end of 2017. It has these superconducting magnets, and it has a number of other ancillary structures built to accelerate the energy of the particles along the way. And inside the accelerator, there are these two high energy beams, particle beams, that are traveling at close to the speed of light before they finally hit one another.
It's crazy to think about.
Mm-hmm.
So cool that we could even achieve that as humans.
It is. It's astonishing. Mm-hmm. Just to be frank with you, and I'm being sincere. Mm-hmm. I'm being sincere in that point. The beams travel in opposite directions in separate pipes, separate beam pipes, which is the phrase that CERN uses.
Yes, beam pipes.
Beam pipes. The tubes are kept at an ultra high vacuum. They're guided around by the magnetic field. Mm-hmm. Produced by the superconducting magnets, and the electromagnets themselves are built from these coils of a cable that virtually conducts electricity without resistance or loss of energy. So these are very, very efficient. Mm-hmm. And to make these magnets, these super cool magnets that are super cool on several levels.
Yes, to make them function at that level.
Right, right. What do you have to do?
Well, it has to be – the environment has to be extremely cold. The magnets themselves have to be crazy cold. It requires the magnets be negative 271.3 degrees Celsius. That's a temperature colder than outer space. Let's say you're on a spacewalk as an astronaut. It is colder in these supermagnets, or these supermagnets are colder than you would be if you were standing outside in outer space.
So 271 degrees Celsius is about 519.8 degrees Fahrenheit.
So it's minus that.
Minus that, yeah. Which is insane, but is the nature of the business. And the LHC.
I guess we can start calling it that now.
Yeah, yeah. I think we know it well enough to call it that. The LHC was designed for a couple of different things, but one of its primary purposes was to prove the existence of something called the Higgs boson. And I can tell you what it is real briefly if you want.
Yeah, please do. Okay. I'd love to know.
All right. So there is
– I know it's been called the God particle.
It has been called the God particle, and you and I would hang out and wonder whether this would lead to the end of the world, because we received emails about this.
A lot.
Plenty. We're going to borrow some quotes from an excellent article called What Exactly is the Higgs Boson, available at HowStuffWorks.com by an author named Jonathan Atberry. Mm-hmm. So to understand what the Higgs boson is, we need to examine the theories describing the way the cosmos works, and we'll call it the Standard Model.
Okay.
Also not an ironic name.
Sounds good.
So here's the gist of the Standard Model, and it comes to our species around the early 1970s. The idea is that the entire universe, everything you know and everything you or your friends will ever encounter, or your ancestors or your descendants, capital E everything, is ultimately made up of 12 different sorts of particles of matter and 4 forces. In the 12 particles, you'll encounter 6 things called quarks and 6 things called leptons. Quarks are what comprise protons and neutrons, while the things we call leptons include electrons and the electron neutrino. Scientists think that you cannot break leptons and quarks into smaller particles, mm-hmm. so far. So we've got those 12 particles, and then we have 4 forces that sort of Captain Planet together to make the universe run.
Yeah, and that's gravity, which you're probably aware of, going up and going down, but there's more to it than that. Electromagnetic force, that's what you see in magnets. Mm-hmm. Then you've got strong and weak forces, and these are more of the nuclear forces mm-hmm. that have to do with the way atoms interact. It gets a little intense when you're getting down into those mm-hmm. forces and trying to truly understand them, and that's why being a particle physicist is a high-paying job.
And a demanding one, right? And a very important one. So we've got those – let's focus on those 4 fundamental forces. Scientists believe that each of those forces that Matt just named have a corresponding carrier particle, which they call a boson, B-O-S-O-N, that acts upon matter. And there's a cool analogy in here. Some physicists have described bosons as weights anchored by mysterious rubber bands to the matter particles that generate them. So we can think of particles constantly snapping back out of existence in an instant, yet equally capable of becoming entangled with other rubber bands attached to other bosons.
Yeah, this is easy to understand stuff.
I feel like you're being sarcastic.
it's just difficult stuff to wrap your head around. That's all.
Mm-hmm. Because we're also describing the movement of matter through the universe, right?
Yes.
And the forces acting upon that matter and the rules of the road for those forces, if they are like chess pieces that can only move in certain directions.
Yes,
certain ways,
yes,
right?
Yes, yes.
So that's what they're looking for. And they've been trying to do this for a while, right?
Yes, they have been. Let's travel all the way back to 1953 to the sixth session of the CERN Council, which took place in Paris from June 29th to July 1st. The convention established the organization was signed. They were subject to ratification by 12 different states. The convention was gradually ratified by the founding member states. We're talking Belgium, Denmark, France, the Federal Republic of Germany, Greece, Italy, the Netherlands, Norway, Sweden, Switzerland, the United Kingdom, and Yugoslavia.
And Yugoslavia. So one thing that's interesting about this is that conspiracy theorists or fringe researchers see this international cooperation as very strong circumstantial evidence that something – oh, I was going to say that something's rotten in Denmark. But Shakespeare aside,
yeah,
that doesn't apply. But that's – you know, some people distrust that level of geopolitical cooperation.
So many different governing entities having their hands in this. Got it. Or, you know, it could just be humans working together to do the coolest experiments possible.
I really appreciate that point, Matt. And I hope that's the case. I was just going to argue that it was probably too expensive for each of those countries to afford on their own. But
makes a lot of sense too.
Yeah. Shadowy cabal, interested scientists Voltroning together, everybody figuring out how to foot the bill, regardless. On the 17th of May in 1954, they first broke Earth, and Geneva officials were watching, members of the CERN staff were watching. Construction continues till September of the same year, and CERN officially comes into being, located there in Switzerland. And today you can find CERN. It's still the same place. You can view it on Google Earth.
It's huge.
It's gigantic. It's based in a suburb near Geneva on the border between France and Switzerland. And currently it has 22 member states. The United States is not a full member of CERN.
Nope.
Israel is the only non-European full member of CERN. It has expanded from 12 to 22 member states. And in addition to the Large Hadron Collider, these physicists, these engineers, some of the smartest people in the world are probing the fundamental structure of the universe.
Yeah, they're studying the basic pieces of matter, the things that are the building blocks that create this table and these hands. Blah, blah, blah. That's the hand sound.
That's the hand sound.
Yeah. it's like we said, we keep reiterating, it's incredibly cool. They're talking about colliding, you know, particles. That's what they do. They hang around all day. They speed up particles to the speed of light almost, and they smash them together and they see what happens.
Because without this sort of technology, physicists would ultimately be participating in thought experiments, right?
Yeah, and a lot of it still is thought experiments that they're trying to prove one way or the other by doing these experiments.
To transform a guess into observable science,
yes,
right?
Yes.
And one of the really interesting things that you noted earlier, Matt, is you said, this is for me where science becomes magic. This is like my Arthur C. Clarke threshold. Without directly observable science, at the very edges of theoretical science, what we encounter is very close to mysticism or articles of faith.
Yeah.
if you're a world expert on something, your best guess automatically becomes leading theory.
Exactly. And that is ultimately what they're testing at CERN. It's the fundamental laws of nature that govern all matter and all existence. And a lot of these are, you know, they're testable and provable to a certain extent, but then when you get deeper and deeper and deeper down into the subatomic and then even deeper levels, it's harder to know what is real and what's not. And that's why CERN is so important.
Furthermore, that's why CERN, for many people, is so frightening.
Yes.
We'll get into something a little stranger after a word from our sponsor. Matt, I have to ask you, because you and I were working together years and years ago when a lot of news about the Large Hadron Collider and the search for the Higgs boson popped up mm-hmm. in the mainstream. What was your experience like hearing that news and as we were learning about this?
Around the time, the website Dig was pretty big. And I would go there all the time and they would have updates, essentially. Mm-hmm. And I would watch news conferences that were live with updates from CERN about, you know, they're getting the LHC is preparing to run some tests, but they're having some issues with some of the magnets.
Right.
Let's see. I would watch with bated breath with some of these press conferences where they're going to announce something. And nothing came for a long time. You know, nothing official about the Higgs boson.
Mm-hmm.
But then when it did, I think it's still so out there beyond my understanding that it's hard for me to wrap my head around it. But I remember being excited knowing that we at least had a better grasp on whatever this field is, this Higgs field that connects all matter. That made me really excited.
Yeah, and it's amazing to believe that something some of the most intelligent people in the world had been essentially guessing at for so long turned out to be a real thing. There's this sort of, what was the phrase you used? Bated breath?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that perfectly encapsulates it because, you know, there's this immense relief that every person encounters when it turns out that the universe obeys something we can understand.
Yeah.
For a moment.
Because there's a certain amount of certainty that you can get from that. but, you know, simultaneously, as we're reading about this, we're hearing about it and updates are coming, we're also making this show, the video portion of this show at this time.
Mm-hmm.
And we are, you know, we are getting letters, we're getting, you know, people tweeting at us and everything, telling us about all of the things that CERN is doing and the Large Hadron Collider mm-hmm. that are going to essentially end humanity or destroy the planet in some way or at least cause havoc.
Right, yes. So over the years leading to and after its construction, CERN became the subject of numerous strange rumors, conspiracy theories, and some would argue legitimate worries. So what gives? I remember several of the things we received, many of which were very in-depth, and one of the ones that you brought up recently when we were doing research for this episode was the story of the time-traveling saboteur.
Oh, yeah. Okay. In the days leading up to the first proof of the Higgs boson,
which is 2012.
2012, yeah. The exact date. Yeah, you can find it. I remember reading that there were a lot of issues with the collider itself. There was some malfunctioning occurring. I think there was something with birds, and I couldn't find it when I looked again, but I thought something occurred with birds.
Oh, yeah, yeah. They started speaking Aramaic and their eyes were bleeding.
That was the major part of it. but there were a bunch of small issues that were occurring, and then parts of the magnet,
mm-hmm.
one of the magnets wouldn't function correctly. So they kept putting off
right.
The ability to actually do this testing and then run all of the diagnostics on the testing that you need to analyze the data that you get back.
Uh-huh.
'Cause that's where you actually find out if you found the Higgs boson particle.
Right, yeah. When the experiments are happening, when it's in media res, they have no – I mean, you can tell if things are working.
Yes.
But it takes some rigorous analysis afterwards to find what you found.
Yeah, supercomputers to go, all right, we're going to look at all this data for a couple months.
Minimum.
Yeah. But as we're saying, the idea was that perhaps there was some time traveler who had come back to 2011, 2012 to sabotage the Large Hadron Collider because something terrible was going to happen in the immediate future because of these experiments. So this benevolent time traveler just sabotaged the magnets. He brought some birds in apparently to mess things up, the weird birds that speak languages they shouldn't know. I'm having fun with
this. I got you. I'm following you. Well, the idea there is fascinating because it's one of the biggest tropes of time travel, the belief that someone would come from a possible future to prevent that future occurring and the various ways in which that quickly becomes a mind-boggling paradox. Stephen King has a novel called 112263 in which a character attempts to – this is not much of a spoiler. A character attempts to prevent the assassination of President Kennedy.
Yeah, because he's stuck in a time loop on that day, or he's – chosen to enter a time loop accidentally. And he just Groundhog Days the assassination, essentially.
So he has one thing that really stuck out for me in the concept or the language of the book is the phrase, the past is obdurate, meaning that in the book it is, or in this universe, in this story, it is possible to make small changes, right? We can put a coffee cup on the left side of a desk versus the right, and the world spins as it will. But that to enact a larger change, like causing or preventing the death of a person who for a moment was a hinge upon which human civilization swung, that becomes a bigger order, a much larger bag of badgers. And it is either impossible or incredibly dangerous to do so. So with that kind of internal logic, which again, I'm completely plagiarizing from a completely fictional book. In this internal logic, then, if a time traveler is attempting to prevent something incredibly important, whether incredibly good, incredibly bad, then it would be a huge shift and it would be a problem. But then we also have to think, if somebody had the benefit of retrospect, right, couldn't they travel back to the 1950s and prevent CERN from being built?
That's probably smarter.
You know,
but somebody was going to build it at some point. I mean, you prevented that one, you got to think. Maybe a group of scientists here in the United States working with Canada and Mexico created our version of the LHC.
We almost did, didn't we?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you know, it's tough. It's that whole weird butterfly effect thing where somebody, and especially the idea of science itself, somebody somewhere is going to try it.
And if we treat this as a thought experiment, one thing that is baffling, and look, let's be honest, most people nowadays do not believe in some sort of physical nonlinear time travel, right? But here's the thing. Whether you believe in this idea or not, the weirdest and for me most disturbing aspect of this entire concept is that if a time traveler did change something, we would have no idea.
No, because our reality would just move along.
It may have already happened.
Yeah, numerous times.
Right? And you and I feel like we have been doing this show together for a number of years. But have we? Who was actually sitting here before the timeline changed?
Oh, dude. I think it was me, but.
But was it?
I don't know. Uh-oh. Uh-oh. Wait. Who's that? Oh, it's just Paul. Okay.
You're staring. Matt is staring at super producer Paul, seeing if he can get a reaction from him. Did you get one? I was looking at you, looking at Paul.
He's got that poker face.
Wow. You got an eyebrow lift. All right. we're gonna move on. I am still paying for that pun at the top.
Full disclosure, our Christmas holiday party was last night. So all of us, you know, we got down. This morning when we're recording this, we're all a little loopy. I think that's all right. We're having a good time in here. Especially Paul. He's having the best time.
So, speaking of time travel, John Titor, if you are listening, please feel free to clue us in on what may or may not be happening at CERN, if there's any nonlinear time travel involved. And John Titor, since you are one of the most famous alleged time travelers in our day and age, we would love to invite you to our holiday party that occurs yesterday.
You know, there were some people I didn't know there.
Yeah, there were a lot of people I didn't know there. Hmm. I've got to start wearing a disguise for that thing. This is just one of the conspiracy theories or fringe beliefs about CERN. Other stuff, believe it or not, is even stranger. One story involves human sacrifice.
Yeah, a video showed up online in 2016 of what appeared to be human sacrifice occurring in the Geneva facility of CERN. It looked like some kind of occult ritual. There was a mock human sacrifice that occurred. You can watch the video. You can see at least parts of it online. The Guardian has a great write-up on it if you just type some of those search words in.
Sure.
It looks like a woman gets stabbed
by these people wearing black cloaks, black robes.
Yeah.
And it's conducted in front of a large statue of Shiva, the Hindu deity.
Yeah. It looks intense, let's say that.
Mm-hmm.
But according to The Guardian and some of the sources they used, it appears to be at least not genuine. Like, nobody actually got hurt.
Uh-huh.
It appears to be just some people goofing around.
Sure.
At least that's the official story.
Sure thing, yeah. And Bohemian Grove is just a summer camp.
Yeah. It is, right?
Uh-huh. Yeah. I'm sure that's what a spokesperson for Bohemian Grove has said.
Okay.
Oh, okay, look, this was probably a prank. Bohemian Grove is real. A certain spokeswoman told a French press agency that these scenes were filmed on our premises, but without official permission or knowledge. CERN does not condone this type of spoof, which can give rise to misunderstandings about the scientific nature of our work.
Yeah, and it should be known that the people responsible for pulling the prank did have access badges. So they were there. It's not like they didn't have permission to be on the campus.
So people who really did work at CERN at least faked a human sacrifice.
Yes.
That's true.
Yes.
Right? At the very least, they faked it.
For somebody's music video or student film, I'm assuming. I would like to see the final product.
Or they stab someone.
Yep. Yep. Those are the two things pretty much.
Here's another one. Earthquakes.
Yeah.
Manufactured earthquakes. Not purposely manufactured, but I mean, let's say accidentally man-made, right?
Yeah. The idea is that perhaps the LHC is causing earthquakes unbeknownst, or it's like a side effect of some of the LHC testing that the scientists didn't expect.
The idea came from a couple of different places, including a YouTube channel called BP Earthwatch. So CERN had an experiment called AWAKE, and it was exploring the use of plasma as an accelerant for particles, right?
Mm-hmm.
To send particles over a distance and have them retain high energy, right? Or to accelerate particles to high energies over a distance. And one of the experiments involved sending plasma from the LHC underground for 250 miles to the Gran Sasso Nuclear Physics Laboratory in Italy. And for people who believe this theory, well, the argument is this, that CERN's experiments, specifically AWAKE, sending plasma, right, underground through these long distances, somehow triggered earthquakes of varying strength and significance. The argument here seems to dwell on their interpretation of maps, essentially. And it's not completely out of bounds, because we do know, for instance, that at HARP, before HARP shut its doors, they were exciting the ionosphere, right? So we do know that there can be large scale effects. But, you know, if people are causing earthquakes, here's the first question anybody would ask if they were being skeptical. If people found out they were doing something that was causing earthquakes, why the hell would they do it? Surely they wouldn't keep doing it.
Yeah.
There's no way that people who manufacture earthquakes and know that they're doing it would keep doing it. The motive's just not there.
Yeah, the motive's not there. I mean, you wouldn't continue testing nuclear weapons underground if it caused earthquakes.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, that totally does it. That is true. Yeah, that's a good point, because in the DPRK, aka North Korea, underground nuclear testing does in fact cause earthquakes.
Well, yeah. Another example would be, you know, if you were shooting some kind of hydraulic mixture of chemicals into the ground to break up the rock so you could get more oil out, and it just happened to cause earthquakes, you wouldn't do that anymore.
Oh, fracking. Yeah, that's right. We're doing that too. Oh my gosh. I guess we're causing like two versions of man-made earthquakes. So the idea that CERN would be causing an earthquake, while not scientifically valid, is not outside the realm of ridiculous actions by human beings.
You know what feels a bit outside that realm but is so awesome I want it to be true?
What's that, Matt?
That same experiment that was being performed at LHC AWAKE, perhaps – it was creating a portal, or the whole point of it was to create a portal to another dimension and or a wormhole across the universe. How cool would that be? Because there are several YouTube channels that you can find videos of people purporting that that's what occurred. There's some videos of intense storms occurring above the LHC with just intense lightning going on. And the belief there is that they opened a portal either to the underworld, i.e. Satan, or just to, you know, an extraterrestrial planet somewhere.
Sort of like upside down.
Yeah.
A dimension slightly tilted to the left.
Yeah, man.
Yeah. That's cool, man. Sign me up. I'll go to another dimension. I'll go to the mist world in that other Stephen King story. I'll gladly travel to the upside down.
The mist world seems pretty scary.
I don't think I would last long.
Yeah.
I'd give it a go.
Right?
Yeah, man. Yeah, man. Here for a good time, not a long time.
Okay, explain something to me. Does the mist, and this is kind of a spoiler, and just stop listening if you don't want to hear
it. We're past
this.
The statute, man. It's okay. 5 years. Okay, we established that.
So in the mist, is it an actual dimension that's being breached or that is coming into our dimension, or is it just something that affects the mind? Because I started watching this show that's based on the mist, and it seems to have a completely different understanding of what it is than what I thought it was.
I believe the answer is found in the problem a lot of producers have when they're adapting something to television, right? Which is, inevitably, if a show runs long enough, it dilutes into a soap opera-esque sort of thing about people's relationships.
Lost?
Yeah. Oh, Walking Dead? Right?
Yeah.
Walking Dead is like a soap opera where everybody says everyone else's name 5 times in a paragraph and occasionally a zombie shows up. And, you know, there are a lot of people who love this show, and I think zombies are really cool monsters.
In Atlanta, come on.
And Atlanta, yes. Yeah, this is a hometown show, and there's some amazing acting in it. It's just not for me, but I think that's why The Mist happens there. And to answer your question, in the story The Mist, there's a thing – somebody correct me. Write in and correct me if I get this wrong, but there's a secret government project, right?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe Project Arrowhead or something.
Yes, it's something to that effect, yeah.
It's rather vague. And what they ultimately do is they open a hole into this dimension from which this mist pours out, and the mist sort of functions as the natural environment for the creatures from this dimension, which are all aggressive and kind of dumb and monstrous, and they hate you.
And some of them are huge, right?
Yes, and some are in like the size of a large dinosaur.
That is so cool.
Okay. I think that's cool too.
I'm sorry to get into too much of that, but the thought of that occurring because of the LHC, I think, I wonder if that picture gets overlaid sometimes for people. They imagine something like that occurring at LHC. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly. There's this other idea that you introduced me to about asteroids, that the LHC could generate a magnetic field that could somehow pull an asteroid toward Earth if the iron content of the rock was high enough.
Yeah, this one doesn't hold much water just because of the science involved and how strong of an electromagnetic field, you know, is actually being created at the LHC, mm-hmm. and how strong that would have to be to have any effect on any body that's, you know, outside of our atmosphere.
However, one thing that really could happen.
Oh, the one thing.
Black holes.
Black freaking holes. The scariest thing that exists in our universe, in my opinion.
The LHC could legitimately, in theory, produce miniature black holes.
Which miniature.
Which still function as black holes, and scientists readily admit this.
Yes, we've got a statement from a CERN spokesman, and this comes from express.co.uk. Quote, although powerful for an accelerator, the energy reached in the LHC is modest by nature's standards. Cosmic rays, particles produced by events in outer space, collide with particles in the Earth's atmosphere at much greater energies than those of the LHC. These cosmic rays have been bombarding the Earth's atmosphere as well as other astronomical bodies since the bodies were formed with no harmful consequences. These planets and stars have stayed intact despite these higher energy collisions over billions of years. The LHC will not generate black holes in the cosmological sense. However, some theory suggests that the formation of tiny quantum black holes may be possible. The observation of such an event would be thrilling in terms of our understanding of the universe and would be perfectly safe. Unquote. So don't you feel better?
Nah, because the because, you know, there are other people who argue that the risk of operating the LHC disproportionately outweighs anything, any benefits science might gain from experiments. And this is from another spokesperson for an outfit called LCHDefense.org. It is not possible to know what the outcome of the experiments will be, but even CERN scientists concede there's a real possibility of creating destructive theoretical anomalies such as miniature black holes.
And we just heard him say it.
Right. And for people who are concerned about this, they believe these events have the potential to fundamentally alter matter and destroy the planet because a miniature black hole would be trapped in Earth's gravitational field and over seconds to hours interact, acquire more mass, and if the theoretical process of Hawking radiation doesn't work as predicted or as quickly as predicted, then the black hole might stick around. The thing that people say is if these theoretical tiny entities, mm-hmm. quantum black holes, were created, they would wink out of existence almost instantaneously to human observers.
Yeah, you would pretty much only know by observing the data afterwards. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it is really interesting. CERN scientists say that this kind of miniature black hole or quantum mm-hmm. black hole mm-hmm. could have effects on other dimensions, which sounds really interesting to me. So even though it's only a blip in of existence in our three-dimensional world – well, I guess four dimensions with time, but mm-hmm. it could have effects further on the dimensional scale. which is fascinating, especially if you think about, you know, multiverse theory, with the idea that there we exist on a plane, much like a piece of paper.
Yeah.
You get all these pieces of paper stacked together, mm-hmm. and you create a quantum black hole in the top piece of paper. Let's just say that's where we exist. Mm-hmm. Somehow that quantum black hole would go all the way through, or at least some of the way through, the rest of the papers that are stacked up together. So you could cause a disturbance, theoretically, mm-hmm. across all of the multiverse. Which
insane.
Sounds like a bad idea.
It sounds like a strange idea. It gets us to where today's episode concludes, because, old friend, we are on the bleeding edge of science. And right now, as we record this, it's coming out in 2018, but we're at the very end, the twilight hour of 2017. And we know that discoveries are being made,
mm-hmm.
right? They're being worked toward, that will fundamentally change our understanding of the universe and possibly our understanding of our own inner workings. And at this point, this is something you were telling me off air, it's all theoretical.
Yeah. The good, the bad, it's all theoretical on those tiny, tiny scales that we can barely observe. And all we can do is try and discover more by experimenting. And I think that's the right way to go. Humans, we have to be very, very careful of that, doing it because we can rather than we need to understand. It's just so dangerous at some of that – in those levels, it feels so dangerous.
Yeah, I respect where you're coming from, but you know that I'm fundamentally
– I know.
Different in that regard.
I know.
And maybe that's why we get along so well. So we are going to – call it a day. Yet again, we have recorded an episode without the world ending, in this timeline at least.
Mm-hmm.
The strangest things we have discovered are that miniature black holes are a real thing that CERN can create, that is not hogwash, that people do manufacture earthquakes.
Yep.
And everybody's just pretending that's a normal thing. It is not, and it's terrible.
It's worth the money.
Future historians will see it on the same level as people committing human sacrifice because they're afraid the sun won't go up.
Wow.
Money is a religion.
Ooh.
So we also know, speaking of human sacrifice,
yeah,
that people who worked at CERN are at least doing some weird theater stuff.
Yeah.
And the thing, again, that I find most bizarre about this is, if there were a time traveling saboteur or group of saboteurs, we would have no idea. So what do you think of the experiments going on at CERN?
Yes, and why do you think it's become this subject of such strange accusations over time?
Mm-hmm.
Is it just because of the curiosities and the unknowns for minds like myself, which don't fully grasp what's going on? Or is it because there really is something going on, a little fuzzy?
Is CERN creating fuzzy timelines? Right? Is the Mandela effect just a ripple of CERN?
That guy's over there again.
Yes, Paul.
Oh, it's just Paul again. Jeez.
Yeah, you know Paul.
Okay.
You remember me, right? My name's Bill.
Yeah, I know Bill. Yeah, we've been working together for years, making the show.
Well, Mike and I are going to call it a day. all right. Thank you so much for tuning in, everybody. We hope that you are having a wonderful start to your new year, and we'd like to hear from you. Especially if you are a physicist, we would love to hear your best analogy for the Higgs boson.
Yes, please.
And the way bosons function upon these forces, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you can find us on Instagram, you can find us on Twitter, you can find us on Facebook, you can find every show we have ever done on our website, deep breath, stufftheydontwantyoutoknow.com.
And if you don't want to find us on social media, you just want to get to us directly, you can write to us. We are conspiracy@howstuffworks.com.